Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm and clarity and conviction, even in anxious times. And my name is Urban Nugent, and I'm delighted to have with me my friend and collaborator, Bridget Tyer. Bridget, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. And you know what, Urban? It is Friday, the 3rd of January, 2025.
Yes.
And as we said in our last podcast, because we're recording both of these on the third day of the new year, it's exciting to turn the page, right? And yeah. I don't know, I always love the new year because it's this construct that gives us a chance to take, you know, take stock and to have kind of a fresh perspective.
Yep.
And I just think the topic that you picked is so perfect for the start of a new year. So why don't you tell our listeners what we've teed up for today?
Yeah. So today's topic is called Optimism, a Leadership Superpower. And, you know, as we enter 2025, it's interesting, you know, there's certain journals and business schools, if you Google them, they come up with these lists. Well, some of the lists are top traits that leaders need in the coming year or years ahead. And it's interesting, you know, I was looking at a few of them and, you know, some of them are pretty obvious, but three of the four ones that I looked at, optimism was there. And I said, that's really interesting. And then got me thinking, you know, and here we are on the start of a new year. And of course, what is synonymous with January the 1st? It's all New Year's resolutions. And already I've had conversations with some people telling us what they're going to do, et cetera. And another interesting fact is that on average, New Year's resolutions are broken within 11 days. So they don't last very long.
That's not a lot.
And of course, you know, we kind of blame, you know, Mr. Willpower, you know, kind of the I wasn't strong enough, et cetera. What really is interesting is there's a lot of some really great research around optimism and resilience and our ability to follow through and stick with a plan. And so I thought it would be really interesting to kind of look at kind of optimism, what happens in the brain, and then also why is it important to leadership? Why would three journals say, hey, this is an important trait? And of course, it's not perfect. There are pitfalls as well. And so I thought, let's explore that. So Bridget, I'm just curious, as we start this, would you say that you're naturally optimistic?
Well, how I would describe myself is that I am a realistic optimist.
Okay.
I'm a grounded optimist. So what does that mean? I hope for the best, but I plan for the worst. I feel most optimistic when I have really looked at a situation and faced into the real hurdles that will be required to climb, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of have my plan. And so then I feel like I got my legs and my feet under me. And so I would not say that I'm definitely not a Pollyannish thinker.
Yep.
I've just had too many experiences in life where things didn't turn out great, but that's life, right?
Yeah.
And so I am optimistic, but always in a realistic way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like that.
How about you?
You know, last night I was at a New Year party for our company, and my business partner gave me a holiday gift. And so I opened it up. It was a cape, you know. The cape in the back said, Mr. Positivity. And we're always kind of joking about, she says, you're just the most positive person I know. And so therefore, yes, optimism for me is something that has come very easy. And at times, I think I struggle with a little bit of your realistic. So I can veer to being too optimistic, or not so much that it's too optimistic, but that it blinds me perhaps. And I don't think of some of the potential pitfalls.
Yeah.
And that has been, or else I just ignore them. And I create a story that's all going to work out. You know, I'm very much, it's all going to work out.
It's
so I have had to create that balance as well.
Yeah.
But you know, I think for me, I think that positivity and the impact of that positivity is something that I've been aware of. Yeah.
Hey, I'm curious. Your husband Fred, how would you characterize him?
Oh no, he's totally the opposite end. His natural tendency would be towards more pessimism. So he's more and of course he will say, "No, I'm a realist." So and so where I don't see problems, he will absolutely see the problems, etc. So it's a nice balance.
Isn't that fascinating? Because that's my husband too.
Yeah.
Everything's always going to work out, you know, and it does blind him at times, you know. Yeah. Lucky for him, he's got me saying, well, let's really take a closer look here. So isn't it fascinating that we often find the balance in people that we marry or surround ourselves with, hire, you know? It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. So Irvin, you know, a good place I think to start is to better understand the connection between optimism and then what's going on in our brains. So what would you love to share on that?
One of the things I just want to say right off the bat, this is not an advertisement for saying that you have to be only optimistic. And I think part of what we learn from the neuroscience is that our survival and our wellness, it depends on a balance. There has to be a balance between optimism and pessimism. You know, and so if we've too much on one side, life is a little miserable. You know, it's kind of like gloomy and kind of like we're always kind of feeling under threat. Things are not going to work out. But on the other side, we live very dangerously. We take probably risky decisions that have no merit or grounding. And so therefore, what we want is kind of a balance. Now, what's interesting is that each of the optimism and the pessimism, they're associated actually with two different brain hemispheres. And so high self-esteem, a cheerful attitude, if you tend to look in the positive aspects of any given situation, that's optimistic belief in a bright future, that's associated with the left hemisphere of the brain.
Huh.
And whereas a gloomy viewpoint, looking more at the negative, exaggerate kind of the significance of something that might go wrong, kind of low self-esteem, this is associated with the right hemisphere. As both of those interact, you know, there's a whole biological and functional differences. But, you know, this right hemisphere is a much more watchful and inhibitive mode, which we need at times. We need some inhibitions and this sense of insecurity. You know, we just come off an episode where we talked about our security, and which is important. And then the left hemisphere is this positive feedback that it receives within the brain and confidence in one's ability to manage the different challenges. And you know, what's really interesting as well is there's a lot of research now coming out about the health benefits, or at least the health impact in that balance, and really health benefits for people that display higher levels of optimism.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting because the research shows us that optimists have healthier lives, right? Mm. Psychologically, physically. And you know what? They tend to live longer, which I think is very interesting. Now, it makes sense because they recover more quickly from ailments when they have fewer undesirable psychological symptoms. Now, it doesn't mean they have rosy lives. I mean, you know, life happens to everybody.
Yeah.
When facing adversity, they tend to recover more quickly.
Yeah.
And they tend to have better coping mechanisms and tend to focus on problem solving, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. In preparing for this episode, I had this thought, and I don't know if it's true. You know, you and I were talking before we hit the record button that, you know, you had gotten sick over the holidays. And, you know, I just got a little cold, but I had young children around me all the time. And a two-year-old who's in daycare is a petri dish, right? So there was one time when I got really sick a while ago, got that nasty thing that, you know, seems like you had, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this time I didn't get that sick. And I thought, you know what? I observe that I was in a more optimistic frame of mind this time. Mm-hmm. I was around germs, but I wonder if my optimistic frame of mind helped my immune system to cope better. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
But it just was an interesting thought that I had.
Mm, like
so,
that.
So I don't know. So let's talk now, Irvin, about what does it look like in action? You know, this is a podcast for leaders. So I'm curious, when we break it down from a leadership perspective, what does it look like?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, kind of like, what are some of the traits? And so here are three that I think, when I think about it, come to mind for me. So the first thing is, I think optimistic leaders have an easier time accessing a growth mindset. You know, like a sports coach, you know, it's optimistic, you just don't want to win. It's actually, they believe they will win. We are going to win. We are going to be successful. We are going to get this contract. And I think, you know, leaders with this kind of model, naturally it's caught by the team, you know? And so there's this confidence that we're constantly aiming for success. And it's not just we're striving, but we actually believe that with continuous improvement, we can advance. And this then tends, of course, to lead to some innovation, to be proactive in problem solving. And, you know, when optimistic leaders kind of communicate that mindset, it just trickles down, and there's this sense of confidence in the team members encouraging each other. And I think that's important as well. This learning, this adaptation, this pursuit of excellence. Mm-hmm. And I think that enables people to take risks and to learn from experiences. So I think, you know, that growth mindset, which is so important both for our development. And I think, you know, we've talked in further episodes that people love workplaces where they're challenged, where they grow, et cetera. And so it creates a workspace that's very stimulating. Mm. The second one then that comes to me is just pure resilience itself. You know, we talk about resilience in one sense, and, you know, a lot of people is just this, and kind of the more common definition is just, you know, when bad things happen, can you get up and just continue? And I think optimistic people are able to reset quicker. I think, you know, when things don't go wrong, you know, instead of really dwelling on mistakes or setbacks, it's this forward thinking mindset. Mm-hmm. It's like, get up, dust yourself, move on. What's the next? Now, there is a danger here. There's a danger that we do that too quickly, that we don't learn the lessons. And of course, this is this balance that we're doing.
Right.
But this forward movement is really important, this sense of that we can learn from failure if we spend enough time reflecting and have some candid, you know, conversations about what transpired, how can we go on. But this ability just to get up and to kind of think about, okay, it went wrong, but now we can continue, we can go, I think is very, very important. And I think, again, that as well feeds through the team as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing is just going back to what I talked about at the beginning, just sheer old positivity, that there is this, I think optimistic leaders have an ability to create a very supportive, encouraging work environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're more likely to celebrate successes and achievements, express gratitude, etc. And, you know, we go back, you know, I remember this is long time research going back, you know, in a daily basis, the level of positivity and negativity that we experience in the workplace. And really for us to function well, the balance has to be way more positive than negative.
Yeah,
and the experience is the other way, that people feel in their workplace, they hear a lot more negative.
Yes.
And not that negative, again, this is a balance here. But I think with optimistic leaders, there is this culture of really wanting people to be supported, to feel valued, to feel heard. And that leads to kind of active listening and support. So I think those are three things that come to mind of how optimistic leaders kind of create a culture and a workplace that really is caught by others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, does that resonate with you, Bridget? When you think of the clients you work with, does anyone kind of embody any of those?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, just on the positivity thing, and again, there has to be resonance there. You know, if everything's going to hell in the handbag and the leader's going, it's great.
People are like,
okay, what's going on? But we don't follow negative leaders, because why would we?
We
need people who show us something better.
Yeah.
But two clients come to mind immediately. And one is a client that I've worked with for over 22 years. Since the infancy of his business, he started working with me, and he had 5 people. And his business has been around for, you know, 21 years now. So he's been able to do something many small business owners don't, which is survive You know, so many businesses go out around that 5-year mark. And definitely growth mindset, definitely very resilient, and just, you know, doesn't give up, is undaunted by adversity. And then another client who took over an antiquated association and was charged with bringing that association into the 21st century. I've worked with him on and off for about 8 years, and his growth mindset, his boldness and positivity, man, he just pulled them along. And it's just been really fun to see that. There are many other leaders. I mean, if we had an hour, I could list others, but those two came to mind right away.
I love that. So there was three that I thought of. Any other things come to mind, Bridget, when we think about traits that an optimistic leader might embody and bring to an organization?
Yeah, I think one that's so important is that optimistic leaders are creative problem solvers. Mm. You know, instead of dwelling on problems, they focus on solutions. And it doesn't mean that they ignore reality, as we've said, because that doesn't lead anybody anywhere. But what they do is they devote most of their energy to creative problem solving. And so they don't get paralyzed by obstacles, right? There's that resourcefulness to find solutions. And what they do is they reframe obstacles as a puzzle to be solved. Mm. And then that inspires their team. My husband is such an optimist, and he is such a creative problem solver. And he always looks at problems as puzzles to be solved.
I love that too.
And so, you know, they encourage brainstorming and collaborative, you know, sessions to say, hey, you know, we got this, but let's figure out our way through. We can find a way.
Yeah.
And then I think two others would be there. When you are around an optimistic leader, they are inspiring.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they inspire themselves.
Yeah.
And they have a vision of the future that is positive, that they are able to rally people around from an authentic and passionate place. And moreover, they embody that vision and those values. They walk the talk. They set a positive example. I mean, it's one thing to have a vision, and then it's another thing to act in ways that are counter to that. That's, you know, not very powerful, right?
Yeah.
So they're inspiring and they set a great example. And I guess the last thing I would say, and I think this is so important, is that they're accountable. Mm. They hold themselves accountable. They have no interest in playing the blame game. They don't point fingers when things go wrong. Rather, they help their employees step back and figure out, okay, where did we go astray here? And what can we learn from this? And so they foster this culture of openness and transparency. And people speak up because they know it's safe, you know, to do so.
Mm.
I think that's so, so important. These leaders hold themselves to the same standards they expect from everybody else.
Yeah.
And they own their mistakes. And to me, that's inspiring. I don't know. What do you think, Irvin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing how it can be caught by others. You know, an example to me comes up. We were having dinner about a month and a half ago at a restaurant. We ended up talking with the manager. We actually had a long conversation with the manager. And I thought I knew a mutual friend who this person was the vice president of human relations for the whole organization. And I said, do you know this person? And you could just say, when I mentioned the name, his eyes just lit up and he goes, and she's no longer there. She'd moved on. Huh. And he said, oh my God. And then he just went into this whole thing about that this person really changed my life. And I said, how so? Wow. And talked about how this ability of them to communicate a vision of positivity, of this instilled sense that they could grow and develop, which was really caught by him. And this creative problem solving. So in the restaurant business, lots of stuff, there's always stuff going wrong and, you know, everything, you know. And so this dealing with problems in a positive mindset, a can do, we can fix this with calmness and just, you know, kind of this ability to kind of really instill a sense of that creative problem solving. And he said, you know, that's what I aspire to. And it's very interesting. I was then looking throughout the meal, some of his interactions. And you could just get a sense of off, you know, his own positivity and how that had imbued him as well.
So she had rubbed off on him.
Totally. Yes. He had caught that and wanted to catch it. He was inspired and said, yes, this is someone, how they lead is how I want to lead.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
It brings up a memory for me. We talked about how it's the first of the new year of 2025. And one of the exercises we do as a family, and this time we just did it on our chat, you know, our group chat, is, you know, we all reflect back on favorite movie, favorite memory, favorite books you read, you know, blah, 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 and then your goals for the new year. And what was interesting is we all had the same favorite memory. And it might sound surprising, but it was the memorial service for my husband's father, you know, his grandfather. And they all mentioned that as their favorite memory.
Interesting.
And when I think about it, the way they spoke, they all gave, you know, short tributes. And when they spoke, it was like how this restaurant guy spoke about this woman. And one of his grandchildren said, when I looked at him, I thought to myself, that's the kind of man I want to be. Yeah. That's how I want to lead my life. And that's how I want to run my business.
Yeah.
And so isn't it so true that we are contagious to one another in the very best sense of the word?
Yeah.
What a lovely...
Yeah. You know, and you know what's nice about this as well is, you know, so often we're aware that anger is contagious and that, but it's so is optimism. So is the, you know, kind of, and actually more positive emotions actually are more contagious. So it's wonderful to see. Yeah.
So I guess the final question then, Irvin, is how do we strengthen our optimistic muscle?
An interesting question. So I think I want to suggest there are two audits that we do. And the first audit, I think, is a communication audit. I think it has become, let's become a little more curious and aware of the language that we use. And so how positive is the language we use? You know, and especially when you're in a leadership role, I think at times we forget leaders' words carry a lot of weight. And you may think that people are not listening to you. You may think that you're struggling for attention, et cetera, but people really are. And I think what you say really has an impact. And so our words can inspire. Our words can help people see a different way of thinking things in a more positive light. Or our words can, you know, diminish or discourage or begin to help people doubt themselves. And so this is a great power. And so therefore, I think, you know, just and sometimes we get into verbal sloppiness and we kind of get into habits, et cetera. Yeah. And I just think, you know, how are we describing a situation? What are the words we choose to use? And I think that can be really powerful to kind of think about that, because I think that's an impact. And then the second thing is something I call an optimism audit. My mother, this is a common expression, but she loved it. And my mother said, oh, misery loves company. And, you know, she had, you know, and it's this whole understanding. If you surround yourself with negative people, with pessimistic people, it's going to rub off. Just we've talked about this. And if you surround yourself with optimistic people, that's going to rub off a little bit as well. And so we know emotions are contagious. We catch them. And so, you know, in this little audit, I invite people to think about, you know, who do you spend the most time with? And that can be both family, but outside friends, colleagues and work, et cetera. And what emotions are we catching from them when you think about it? And, you know, our levels of emotions are very much impacted with the people we hang out with. And I think that can be a little, you know, revelation to us, like, oh, that's really interesting.
I love both of those audits. And, you know, the one about watching our communication, our words, what my mind went to is how powerful our words are in terms of the message that they give to us, right? Yeah. What we hear for ourselves. A lot of times we don't realize that.
Yes.
Well, we're talking to somebody.
That's a whole other layer that way. Yeah.
You know? It's like your words matter not only for other people, but for yourself and your body and your brain hears this. Yeah. Anyways, I love these audits and they are great practices unto themselves. And I know we always want to leave with a practice. So what do you think?
Well, let's use, I mean, certainly the communication audit is one, but just even then with the optimism audit, I say to people, you know, think about, you know, the group of people you hang out with, both at home, at work, social settings. And just if you had to score them 0 to 10 on an optimism scale, where would they come? And then you divide the number. If you have 10 people you've listed and your score is, the overall score is 40, and then your optimism, your average one is 4, which is pretty low. And then it's like, you know, we're always trying to widen our circle. So who do we need to bring into our circle? Now, there's people we can't throw out of our circle because they're family, et cetera. And sometimes we can't throw our boss out, et cetera. That's okay. But we get to make choices in who we hang out with. We get to make choices in our friends, et cetera, and our social circles, et cetera. And just become aware who's in my circle and who am I inviting in? Am I inviting in people who are a little more optimistic and upbeat, et cetera? Because that is going to rub off. And I think that can be just really enlightening in the energy that we're hanging out with.
Oh, it's so great. And if we are looking to strengthen our optimism muscle, we need to be around people who can show us the way.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I love that practice, Irvin. In fact, this whole conversation has been such a great way to start the new year. Mm. And you know, it's important to remember, as we said at the start, that like so many things in life, this is a balance, right?
Yeah.
We're not talking about a Pollyannish optimism. Optimism and pessimism are important. They go together and can produce, you know, what I refer to as grounded optimism.
Yeah.
But for leaders, and for those of you listening who lead one person or 50 people or 5,000, your optimism is an essential component of your effective leadership. So my hope is that you heard some things in this episode that you can say, yeah, I do that. And that's great. Own that. And maybe there's one thing, you know, that you can work on doing a little bit better in terms of those qualities, those attributes of optimistic leaders. I know I'm going to pick one of those to work on. And so Irvin, thanks again for such a uplifting conversation.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Hopefully everyone, as they go into 2025 as well, can add a little bit of optimism. God knows the world needs it.
Indeed it does. Take care, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.